That's sharp.
That is. It's beautiful. It's a beautiful thing.
You know what else is sharp, Rob? The beginning of Gapapa. Yeah, I was going to say the first five episodes.
Yes. So we are back. We are back.
And better than ever. Well, maybe not.
No, I think we are better. I mean, I have a better mic, though everyone who has listened to the episode zero said my sound is not that bad. I need to be easier on myself.
I don't think it was bad at all.
I mean, maybe I have really good headphones. Maybe I just am too much of a perfectionist. I don't know.
It's not a bad thing, but Tim says...
It's not.
Better is okay. You don't have to be perfect.
Yeah. Yeah, he did. So, we have heard back from... I've heard back from most of the people on Gapapa. They all seem to be really enjoying it. I think once our listener base kind of starts to pick up, it'll be a lot more fun. But we already have a lot of people downloading it. So to everybody who listened to that, thank you.
Thank you very much.
We appreciate you. We don't have a Patreon up yet, but we'll consider you honorary Patreon members for the non-existent Patreon.
Yeah, reach out to us and we'll say your name because sometimes that's all it takes.
I know Adam in Dagna and Iron Maze and Dr. D. I know they all listen to it. We also know that Tim, who plays Lucky on the podcast, he listened. I believe JB, who plays Bruno, listened.
JB listened, and so did Dan.
Did Dan listen? I haven't been able to hear from him yet.
Yeah, when I spoke with him at Adepticon, he said he had listened, so.
Good. Well, they all seem to have really enjoyed it. All the feedback we've gotten back so far is great. So hopefully, you know, now that we're actually covering the podcast and not just talking about, you know, broad strokes of it, they'll enjoy it more. I do want to address that we are not going to be full spoilers. We're not going to talk about today we're going to cover episodes 1 to 5. We're not going to mention things, you know, that happen in episode 110. And if we do, it's going to be in kind of a clouded way so that we're not ruining things for people in case they want to listen to the episodes with us.
Yeah. You know what I mean? I'm going to promise to try to adhere to that.
We both will. We may make some mistakes because there's a lot. They just had, at time of recording, they just posted episode 204. And we're starting with episode 1. So, it's going to be a long ride. It's going to be a fun ride. And I hope everybody stays with us.
Yep.
So, we'll get cracking right on episode 1. Episode 1 starts with the wonderful intro music. I wish our intro music was as unique as theirs. It's just something I kind of found. We might get new in the future. But it is definitely very distinct. I enjoy it. And then Daniel kind of introduces everybody. You know, we've got Danny playing Mina. Alex is playing Carl with a C. With a C.
Yes.
Tim is playing Lucky. And JB is playing Bruno. Bruno is a coachman. Lucky is a witch. Well, we'll get to that. We'll get to that. Once we get to what the first few actions that happen, it becomes real apparent what kind of coachman he is. Carl. Carl is a stevedore. Maybe Alex is. I don't know what he does for a living.
I'm not sure. He could
But be. Carl is a stevedore, and then Mina is a soldier.
Yes.
And it starts out with they're on this road coming from Middenheim, which is something I think everybody kind of forgot about. Is that kind of implies that they've been to Middenheim before. But I really think everybody just kind of forgot about that once they got flown in the groove of this. So I think we'll just kind of look past that. It makes sense for, honestly, the only one it kind of doesn't make sense for is Lucky. With Mina, she's coming all the way from Ostland. You know, she's probably traveling along the north of the Empire, down through Middenheim, and then all the way to Altdorf. Carl, he's with Bruno. Bruno was heading to Middenheim on a job.
They seem to have known each other before everything started together. Yeah.
I kind of picture that maybe Lucky was just floating down the Reich trying to see if that would maybe take him to Altdorf or something.
I think he was looking for single people, mostly.
I mean, maybe. Somehow Lucky got to Middenheim, or around Middenheim. Maybe he was just walking along the road towards Middenheim and went, oh, Altdorf's that way? Oh, great! That's my Lucky voice. But they're on a coach, and they decide...
On the coach, though? I mean, when we first meet our protagonists, I don't think they're actually on the coach.
No, they're not. They all decided, I kind of wish that they had started with a drive check for this, but they all decided that the coach is wrecked. Their coach is destroyed. So they're having to walk down this road.
Yes.
Now, I will say this. I know you may not know this, Dan, because you're not big in Warhammer Fantasy, but the road between Altdorf and Middenheim is very long, and it goes through... It's classified as two separate forests. I don't remember what's called on the Reich side, but on the... I think it's just the Great Forest on the Reich side, and then on the Middenheim side of the Reich, it's called the Drachwald. And they are some of the biggest forests in the Empire, lots of beastmen. It's a dangerous area.
Well, as Bruno would attest.
Bruno, I'm sure, knows when he wasn't snoring, is that he was supposed to be probably on the lookout for stuff.
Sure. Like the way the road turns as you're going down.
Yes. I think that's probably how the coach crashed, was he just didn't turn the horses. God knows what happened to the horses that were part of that coach.
I don't think we know. We don't have any idea about the horses that were with the coach.
I would assume, I mean, if we're just coming up with maybe a bit of a fan canon here, that, you know, maybe the coach crashed that because it just didn't turn and the horses broke their legs in a ditch, and... out of all the characters, Mina would probably go, nope, their legs are broken. Just killed the horses.
You know, she is rural in origin, so that would not surprise me. She wouldn't want to see an animal in distress.
Yeah.
And obviously they can't doctor those horses.
I think that's the truth. Fan canon. So we're going to kind of, we can look past all that. They are walking down the Altdorf-Middenheim road, and immediately we get our first test roll for everybody, introduction on how the system works. I think it's a really good introduction for just how a D100 system works. Unfortunately, it's immediately almost fatal.
For two of them, I believe.
For two of them, yes. Lucky and Bruno both fail their rolls. Bruno is okay. He doesn't get really hard. Lucky has one wound left.
Yeah, well, Bruno's also tougher than Lucky. Bruno is kind of frail.
Surprisingly tough. Yeah, he's very rotund. And so Lucky gets brought down to one wound, and the party just kind of ignores it, and he just follows everybody else limping along. And eventually they come to an inn, and when they get to the inn, Lucky immediately tries to start swindle free food and drinks, mostly drinks, out of the party and anyone else in the inn. Everyone is really, really generous with trying to, you know, let's help Lucky. Let's buy food. Let's buy drinks. Everyone's very generous with money. That's going to change real fast.
Sure. Well, but I also think that Bruno has in his own mind, he has culpability for what happened, because I think he starts being the most generous because he wants the patrons to stay with his company, the Ratchet Lines, as some sort of benefit to him to keep the passengers.
I think you're giving Bruno too much credit. I think JB definitely feels that way.
Okay, that's a fair point. It's not often I give Bruno too much credit, but I may have just done such.
Yeah, but still, you know, he does pay for it. Carl is very nice. He buys Lucky a drink. I think Mina does as well. The rivalry has not begun yet.
Nope.
They begin to hear some rumors as they're kind of walking and talking around the inn. about mutants in the Empire and the royal family, or the Imperial family, I should say. I believe some of these are foreshadowing for later in the campaign. But so they start hearing all these rumors, one of which is that the Emperor's heir, his son, is a mutant. One says that the Emperor himself is a mutant, that the Emperor is sick, that the roads are more dangerous. The Emperor just isn't putting proper funding into road maintenance anymore because maybe he's preparing for a war with Middenheim. The party doesn't really, you know, they're just like, okay, well, it's, you know, they're all new to the world, new to the system. They don't realize who or what the Imperial family is. So, okay. I mean, and again, for most people, you know, it's okay. That's like talking about the president. When are you going to care about what the president does anywhere? You know, it's going to really have no effect on you. You don't really have much say in it.
Right. Yeah.
So then they meet Philippe.
Yep. Philippe the gambler.
Philippe the gambler. He is, and that is introduced immediately, is he challenges everyone to cards. And Lucky starts gambling with them. Yep. He doesn't really have money, but he gambles for drinks. And then he starts gambling for some pennies. And I
with
think
other people's money, too. Yeah,
for
with
some
other
money,
people's
yes.
money. Yeah.
Yes, that's the other thing, yes. The best part of this, though, is Lucky uses both of his two fortune points. That's all Lucky has.
Yep.
On this gambling check. This is something I'm going to I have a bit of a rant on.
Okay.
In WFRP, when you make your characters, you are given fate and I believe resilience? I believe fate
resilience.
And resilience.
Yes. Yeah.
Or fate and resolve.
Oh, resolve. That's right. Because you
fate
spend
resolve,
a resolve.
Yes.
Point. Yeah.
Yes. Okay. So you get fate and resolve. Something like that. It's two different things. Yep. But you start with two fate and zero of the other one that helps with, you know, combat stuff and things like that is what it does. But the big thing is fate. Fate determines how many fortune points you get. Fortune points let you get rerolls and things like that. Fate keeps you alive.
Yep.
You spend fate points when you should have died, and you can spend a fate point to not die or not take a critical wound or things like that. They're very important.
Yes.
And Tim only, he basically put all of his extra points. You get six total. You start with two as a human, and you get four to put into the others as you want.
Right.
And Tim makes a rookie mistake here with building his character. So typically what I do, this is just talking as a GM, is for the first character somebody makes with Wofurp, I tend to kind of either encourage, I would say aggressively encourage them to put 3 and 3. Maybe even 4 and 2 if they're doing not so much of a combat-based character. Because
Understood.
It gives you more fortune points, it gives you more rerolls, and it makes it a little bit easier for your character to not die, because if you make the rookie mistake that Tim does, we'll see very soon, it comes back to bite you in the ass real hard. Real yep. often.
Yep, yep.
We also have the first mention of Uncle Chet.
Yes.
By Mina.
Mm-hmm.
Uncle Chet is going to be a recurring theme, I would say.
Reference. Yeah,
reference.
Yeah.
Within the show. We're big fan of Uncle Chet's. In fact, Dan and I are such big fans of Uncle Chet and all of the stories that have come out about him that we had the opportunity to play a one-shot with Dan, the GM from this podcast. And unfortunately, you weren't able to make it, Dan, but we had spent a good half a day making our characters together mm-hmm. and having a whole story worked in with that we know Uncle Chet and have this whole relationship with him. And like, we saved his life. He saved ours and all this stuff. Yep. It's we love it. It's great.
The only good man my flagellant had ever met.
Yes.
Truly pure soul.
Yes. You made a flagellant and I made a Witch Hunter of Banan. So we also have Bruno. Bruno is also doing some talking and everything like that, and he actually sees in this inn some other coachmen of the Ratchet lines that he works for.
If you don't mind, I've got a bit of back up, because the coach that hit them was from the Four Seasons line. And it was, Bruno yes. works for the Ratchet line.
He does.
Now, the Ratchet line, according to the story, is a higher level, more of a, if you will, a luxury coach
a cushy,
line. Very reliable for the most part. And I'm thinking that Bruno's dad must have been a manager or a dispatcher in the coach line, because there's no other way this guy got a job as a coach.
I mean...
Or maybe an uncle.
I am
not sure.
Racking my brain after you saying that. It's funny. At some point, we'll have the video for this. But you can see Dan is seeing... I'm just sitting here staring off into space as he's saying this, because I'm trying to find some redeeming quality in Bruno that would qualify him for this job. And I can't.
Yeah, especially when he starts making drive rolls, which he will... later on.
We'll get there yeah, later
anyway,
in this episode.
So I wanted to bring up the Ratchet line in the Four Seasons, because that does become a part of the storyline as
does,
the story
yes.
progresses.
So he works for Ratchet lines. He finds these other two coachmen that work for Ratchet lines named Gunner and Holtz, and they are drunk as hell. They are absolutely wrecked. Bruno is talking with them, he negotiates to get the party to ride to Altdorf. He gets a bit of a discount. And they all pay Gunner and Holtz. Gunner and Holtz then immediately use that money to buy more alcohol.
Yep.
I'll be honest with you. That money, they kind of kiss goodbye. They go to bed. Sleep well. We find out a bit more of the system with Werferp is when you sleep. You make, I think, an endurance test, and if you succeed on the endurance test, you regain your toughness bonus and wounds or something like that. We're not going to focus a lot on the rules for this, but...
No. Yeah, but you're onto it. I think you get your endurance bonus back, and then you roll to see if you get extra wounds back.
Something.
But
it's
either
sleeping
way.
Heals
yeah, something
the
like
body.
That.
Yeah.
Yes, it
so
does. And it does a great
up.
Job.
Yeah, they wake up the next morning. And everybody
Bruno
goes down.
Bruno goes out and hurls.
Yeah, well, no. We'll get there. Everybody yeah. else goes down and eats breakfast and just kind of chills. Lucky sees the noble women. I just realized I forgot to mention the noble women.
Yeah.
So,
well, John is the hand servant, the maid servant.
Well, he notices
remember.
All of them. So
yep.
we'll backpedal a little. Or you yep. know what? I'll introduce them as they come down, because
sure.
they didn't really talk to any of them the night before. They kind of did a bit. Mina went and talked to this young man by the name of Ernst.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes. Ernst is... I love Dan's role-playing for Ernst. A lot of the voices that Dan uses for the NPCs, I'm playing Enemy Within with my wife and some friends, and I'm using those exact same voices because it's just so good.
He is really good.
It's
for
fantastic.
A bad GM. He's very good.
He is, yes. So she talks to Ernst, and Ernst says that he's reading a big book, and he kind of closes it when Mina comes over to talk to her a bit, and then after talking to her, he opens it back up and keeps reading. He is a student at the university. He is studying to be a physician. He wants to be a doctor. Doctor
a
is also going
man.
To be a theme within the show.
Yep.
And so Mina tries to convince him, oh, you're studying to be a doctor, why don't you go heal Lucky? And Ernst refuses. And she
yeah.
just keeps bugging him about it, and he just kind of ignores her.
So Ernst is kind of skeeved out by Mina, almost as much as yeah. Mina's skeeved out by Philippe.
Yeah, yeah, that's a good way to put it.
Cool.
Yeah, we mentioned Philippe before. He's a Bretonian, he's a gambler. He kind of keeps trying to hit on Mina. I feel like it was Dan trying to hit on his wife a little bit in a really cheesy way to make her laugh.
Can't blame him.
I can't. I do the exact same thing with my wife whenever we play. and I introduce a character and I can see on my wife's face that she goes, oh, this guy's hot. Oh, he's going to make you feel real uncomfortable now, dear. anyway, we also have these noble women, and they come down the stairs. The night before, Lucky had kind of introduced himself, and he basically got told to piss off. There's three of them. There's a, I believe Dan described her as handsome woman. She's very tall, very tough. She's clearly a mercenary, big hat. There is a kind of not elderly, I say maybe aging noble woman, and a younger girl similar to Lucky's age. We should say Lucky is 16 when this show starts. Young. He's very young. Which gives Tim an excuse for a lot of the stuff he does. And he basically had tried to communicate with them and hit on them and everything like this, and it didn't work. The mercenary came just shy of pulling a blade on him. So everybody eats breakfast, and they wait. All these other people come down, they eat breakfast, and they wait. And then Bruno comes down, and he throws up immediately.
At least he runs outside to do so.
He does. And he comes back in, and people start teasing him about, you know, oh, you can't hold your liquor. He's the only one who got drunk. I believe he drank several drinks himself, and then he also drank Mina's, because Mina does not like to partake in alcohol.
Correct, yes.
So Bruno comes in, and immediately, instead of going, yeah, ha, 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 he starts shit-talking the innkeeper's ale and how bad it is and calls it rat's piss. It is a thing within Wofurp that most taverns would probably be making ales themselves. It's a house ale. So he is insulting this man personally. And the guy just kind of throws his food at Bruno's lap.
Should be an indication for anybody listening.
Yes. Carl kind of apologizes to the guy, and he says, you know, he might be still a little bit drunk. He doesn't like admitting his own faults. And the guy says, yeah, he knows some people. It's fine.
Yep.
And they keep waiting. And Gunnar and Holtz never come downstairs. And eventually the party starts saying, you know, okay, well, what are we supposed to do? Like, we need to get going. And Bruno says, well, I'm a Ratchet Lines coach driver. I can drive the coach.
And here's where I think Mina supports this idea of...
She does.
It's our coach. It might as well be our coach.
Yes.
We've already paid for it.
Because in Mina's mind, Mina is very much a... What's a good word for it? She has a very strong sense of integrity. And Gunnar and Holtz, where are they? They're upstairs sleeping it off. They're still asleep.
Yep.
So for Mina, they're neglecting their job. They're not fulfilling their duty, therefore their job should be forfeit. And that's a good sentiment. Unfortunately, that is not necessarily how things work.
No.
But in this case, she's perfectly fine with it. Lucky is also perfectly fine with screwing somebody over. He loves this kind of idea. And he goes around, and basically everybody except for Carl gets together and agrees, yeah, we're going to steal this coach.
And then the party as a group decides that Carl's going to go help Bruno so that he doesn't see everything that's going on.
Yes, they're not going to tell him this is what they're doing. They're just going to kind of push Carl gently to just get on.
If the party had a paladin, it would be named Carl with a C.
Very much. So Bruno goes out. He starts working with the horses. Mina starts loading the bags, and then Carl as well. And then Bruno epically fails hooking up the horses, and Mina has to come help him, where we get the wonderful line, No, you don't tie these two things together. It's a buckle.
Yes.
So, as all of this is happening, Lucky is inside trying to swindle all of the passengers out of more money.
Trying to charge them again, yes.
Yes, trying to charge them again, and also let them know, hey, we're going to be leaving soon. So he does it to Philippe, and Philippe says, okay, cool, I look forward to sitting in the coach with Mina. Because unbeknownst to Mina and the rest of the party, Lucky had gambled with Philippe on one of the gambles for Philippe to pay for a seat inside the coach for someone in the party, is the way Lucky phrased it. The way Philippe said is, I'll do that if it's Mina.
Yeah, yeah.
And Lucky 100%. Went, okay!
Sure.
Spoilers, it wasn't Mina.
No.
Mina was not going to sit in that coach with him.
For a minute, it was almost Bruno.
It was almost Bruno. He wanted to. But then he got told, no, you have to drive. Lucky then goes and kind of schmoozes with the noble lady a bit. The guard woman kind of softens up to him. Is like, okay, fine. I guess it's whatever. And then he takes it a little too far and tries to talk to the noble woman directly. And it doesn't go well. And she tells him to piss off again.
Yep.
As you do.
Mm-hmm.
They take off down the road. Bruno almost immediately crashes the coach trying to leave the inn. And he has to spend a fortune point to re-roll it. We're not going to track every fortune point.
Nope.
But
they spent a lot of fortune points in episode one.
They do. Again, because new to the system, rookie mistake. They don't know how much they're going to need them. They set off down the road. They're riding for a while. It starts to get foggy. And as they're driving, at some point, they see a man kind of kneeling in the road. And he's kneeling over a body. And Bruno does not slow down the coach. Now, you might be thinking, as a person just coming into this, that that's not necessarily a bad idea. Or, you know, how horrible that is, actually. That it is a bad idea. He's going to just run this dude over. And then the guy turns around.
If I remember correctly, Bruno's comment was, he's a pedestrian. They will get out of the way.
Yes. And then it's shown that this actually is not a bad idea, because the man gets up and turns around when he hears the horses. And he is covered in these scale-looking things. He's got this green ooze all over him, and he's got a human hand in his mouth. He has been eating a dead body in this road.
Danny utters the wonderful phrase, that is not the best part of a person to eat.
Yes.
Which always makes me chuckle.
Yeah, no, it's pretty good. This guy jumps on the horses and starts stabbing one of the horses. And Bruno is trying to drive the coach, but he's also trying to whip this guy off. And Lucky starts shouting, what are you doing? That's my friend Rolf.
My friend Rolf, yes.
So, a little peek behind the curtain here as a GM. This is one of my favorite shticks in the game. In this campaign, there is a piece of paper in the campaign book that you were supposed to give to one of the players. The GM gets to pick who recognizes this guy.
Yeah.
But somebody recognizes this dude. And yes. Dan picked Lucky. So it's Dan's fault what happens next.
Absolutely. So, and what happens for 3 or 4 more episodes afterwards.
Well, it's Dan. Everything that happens in this game is Dan's fault. That's why he's the bad GM.
He is the bad GM.
So yes. Lucky starts shouting, hey, wait, stop, that's my friend. The guy basically keeps stabbing one of the horses, crawls up the horse, and starts trying to attack Carl. Carl, like, I think he hits Rolf with a rock while he's attacking the horse, and that makes Rolf kind of attack Carl. And then Mina comes up, and she stabs him in the body and kills him.
Yes. In a maneuver that will be named in a later episode.
Yes, we will be marking when that is named. Until then, we will simply be referring to it as kill the guy.
Yes, that's fine.
The coach stops, obviously. Or no, the coach doesn't stop. The horses get basically break loose because of, you know, Rolf stabbing the other one and damaging the reins and all this kind of stuff.
And Bruno didn't really hook them up very good at all, anyway. Yes.
I mean, he's tying buckles together, you know. What do you think's going to happen? The horse runs off into the woods. And then the party hears this really creepy sound, like a roar from around the corner, a bit of a ways down the road. And that is where episode 2 ends.
Yes.
And then we have episode 3, which has one of my favorite titles, which is The Horse Whisperer.
Oh, yes.
So we start with, you know, everyone's kind of freaking out. The party's kind of trying to decide what to do. Lucky is furious at Mina because she just killed his friend.
Oh, yeah. His friend and Ralph, who was just out there hungry.
He was hungry. He's got a family. He was eating a guy. You know, sometimes that's all you have to eat.
Yeah, and he told her that he was his friend, and yet she still kept stabbed him.
It was definitely after, because Mina did not have very high initiative, and Lucky went first.
Yes.
So, Lucky, and I love this, when Tim was making this character, he was rolling for random trappings and things like that. He had 13 candles.
Yes. He was trying to find three more so he could have 16, I think, at some point.
And he goes and gets... He was riding on top of the coach. Or no, he was inside. He gets out, and he starts putting these candles around Rolf's body.
Yeah, any kind of dedication, you know, a memorial of service of some sort.
And it's a whole thing. Everyone else, while this is happening... Lucky is just kind of off behind everybody yelling about Mina and crying over his dead friend. The other rest of the party has work to do. Come on, Lucky.
Yeah.
And so they, you know, they talk to Philippe, and Philippe is like, look, we need to go. Or no, only one of the horses runs off. The one that was being stabbed runs off.
Yeah, the one that was being stabbed runs off. The other one is still hooked up, sort of.
Yes, and so Philippe says, you know, well, look, we have one horse. We need to move.
Right.
Again, for context, they're still in the Great Forest. There's bandits, there's beastmen, there's mutants, there's tons of threats in here. So they're not out of line to say, look, we just got to deal with one horse, okay? It's starting to get near the end of the day. You do not want to be in the Great Forest while it's dark.
Yep.
Bruno says, no, we can't do that. It's going to wear out the horses too much. And this is when we finally see him showing some spine as a coachman. He's using his experience. He knows this stuff. So he says he's going to go get the horse. Okay, great. He goes and he finds the horse, and it won't come near him.
Nope.
Because it's Bruno.
Because he can't pass the test at this point, I think.
Yes. He does fail a check. So Carl says, okay, I'll try and do it. And Carl succeeds on his animal check to try and call it over, and Dan says, okay, well, how are you going to do this? And Carl starts trying to imitate a horse.
Yeah, and it was a really good horse call. Yeah.
It was. And hence the name of the episode, The Horse Whisperer.
But the horse listens. Yeah.
It did. He comes back over. Mina helps Bruno hook up the horse. Bruno, or Carl, goes and consoles Lucky a bit. And basically says, you know what, we can take his body with us, and when we get to the city, we'll give him proper burial.
Yep.
And Lucky says, okay, that's fine. He picks all his candles back up, and he puts the body on top of the coach.
Carl puts the body
Nobody else likes this. Carl no. puts it, yes. Yep. Sorry, yeah, Lucky is skinny as a twig and can barely lift a spoon. Mina... Well, not Mina, because Mina doesn't say this. Danny, immediately when they say, oh yeah, we'll put the body on the coach, goes, I'm going to push it off while we're driving. And Dan starts laughing and goes, are you really going to do that? And she goes, yep. So as soon as the coach starts getting to go, Mina pushes it off the back of the coach. Nobody realizes this.
Yeah, well, and even, I think 3 perception checks were made and nobody caught it.
3 perception checks were made and nobody caught it. They go down the road a bit of a ways towards the scary sound they just heard and stop again because there is a man in the road with a crossbow.
Yes.
And he is threatening Bruno, and he tells them to stop. And Bruno, for this pedestrian, because they are armed, stops. The guy starts asking them questions about, you know, who's in the coach. Do they have nobles? Blah, 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 blah.
Tells everybody to get out of the coach.
And then at some point somebody mentions Rolf, I think. No, it was Lucky. Yep, Lucky yep. pops his head out of the coach and asks them, did you guys know my buddy Rolf?
And they said, what happened to him? Where is he?
Yeah. Yeah. He says, wait, how do you know Rolf? And Lucky says, oh, well, you know, we were buddies. You know, we grew up together and stuff like that. And he goes, well, where is he? Oh, he's up on top of the coach. He's not up there. Yeah, he is. His body's up there. His body? And Mina stands up and goes, yeah, I killed him. And the guy shoots at Mina because,
yep,
duh.
Yep.
He misses, I believe.
Yeah, I think so. Or hits her in the shoulder or something, just grazes her.
Yeah, you're right. He just grazes her and it deals like one wound. Yep, she barely feels it. And at that point,
Philippe.
The other thing we need to mention, Philippe gets out of the coach. He calms down everyone else in the passengers and he kind of flicks up his jacket and he shows that he has a pistol.
Yes.
Combat starts and Philippe, gunslinger, shoots this dude with the crossbow immediately. Carl jumps down, whips out his boat hook. He starts fighting. Mina jumps down, starts fighting.
Bruno's trying to whip them.
Bruno is still on top of the coach, trying to hit them with his whip.
Yep.
He's, of course, I think at one point he tries to use his whip to pull the crossbow out of somebody's hands, and instead they pull the whip out of Bruno's hands.
I think he made the check to hook it, but then they had a better strength. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it was... It was an interesting combat maneuver.
It was, and that's the thing. We have our first combat introduction to the system, and it doesn't really show it in here because the players have the advantage, and quickly gain advantage, which is a mechanic of the system. But they do also figure out that these people are already wounded, which is why this combat goes so easily.
Yes.
As a GM, I'm not sure I like this mechanic so much because it kind of gives the characters a false sense of how deadly combat can be in Wofurp.
Well, I mean, if you think about it, the initial characters are not going to be able to... going back to my experience with D&D, initial characters are going to be fighting first-level monsters or wounded second and third level monsters because they have to be able to survive to be able to progress. So I understand why the combat can't be as drastically as...
Absolutely. Yeah. And I understand from the player perspective.
Sure.
However, Wofurp is not D&D.
Okay.
Warhammer is far deadlier. Again, I understand why it makes sense because, you know, it gives them a chance to build up some XP in this campaign.
Yep.
So that they can spend it. The problem is, in other adventures that Cubicle 7 has put out, company that makes or publishes Wofurp, obviously, they don't do this. So unless you are starting with the enemy within, it's a little bit lackluster, and I think it gives you a false sense of security for combat. Because we will see later in the show, we will see in our next episode, how deadly combat is. It is insane when you get into a real fight. And I don't think this counts as a real fight.
No. As much as they were taken by surprise on the road by this group, they were healthier. They were overall in a better strategic position. So they should have won.
Yes, and I think that's the thing, because we will see in our next episode when we cover 5 to 10, the group makes some decisions that I don't think they would have made if this hadn't given them that false sense of security.
Okay. It is grim, perilous.
It is grim. It is dark.
And it gives you a false sense of security.
It does. But it's also an adventure. So, as in an adventure, we will continue on.
Yep.
They kill all these mutants. They find an overturned Four Seasons coach, and they kind of realize that this is the coach that almost killed Lucky.
Yep.
And Lucky kind of gloats over this a little bit, and then he remembers, oh yeah, his friend is dead and he hates Mina now.
Absolutely.
They kind of start looting bodies, they get a couple things, I think they get a crossbow, a couple people, I think Mina gets some armor.
A male shirt, yes.
A male shirt, and Mina goes and loots one of these bodies that's kind of off to the side, kind of deeper into the woods.
With a couple of crossbow bolts in its back.
And she flips it over, and it looks like Carl.
Like, not just like Carl, exactly like Carl.
That's a good point. Yeah, it's The only difference is the facial hair is different.
True, yeah.
The man has a smaller mustache.
Mm-hmm.
To her credit, I'll be honest with you, I probably, if I was the GM, would have her make a cool check.
Yep.
Dan did not have her do that. It's whatever.
Spousal privileges.
Spousal privilege, exactly. No, I just, as a GM personally, I like throwing in a lot more, you know, when you have psychological things happen, have repercussions.
Gotcha.
But again, not a big deal. Just, I think that would have been fun to have Mina freak out.
Sure.
She calls Carl over, and he kind of looks at this, and we actually get some backstory about Carl.
Yep.
Carl has, I believe he had 3 brothers.
One of whom died?
2 of whom died, okay. I believe.
Okay.
And so it's just him and one other brother.
And he's real trepidatious about this because he thinks it might be his brother.
Yes, and then he goes over there, and he's incredibly confused and unnerved.
He's like, this is none of my brothers.
Yes. And it kind of freaks them out a bit, and they loot... Let's see, I believe they loot his body.
Yes.
And on his body, he has a letter. I should have had the letter. Maybe I'll do that in the future, maybe mm-hmm. not. But the letter says that this man is the heir to 20,000 gold crowns.
An insane amount of money.
Oh my goodness. I'm trying to think, that's probably upwards of several million dollars.
Sure, sure. One of my favorite parts of this part of the story is the tongue-in-cheek fun naming that happens in Warhammer, either Warhammer mm-hmm. Fantasy, with the lawyers that sent the letter, Lock, Stock, and Barrel. Which...
Yes. Think about it for a second, you'll kind of figure out where this might be going.
Yeah.
The party doesn't.
No.
So, they read this letter, and then they realize, after... they read the letter. None of them can read.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I think they have to get somebody to read. Oh, they have to get they have to get Ernst to read it for them. Because yes. Yeah. Oh.
So Ernst reads that letter to them. Lucky is looting other bodies. And so basically the letter that Mina found with Carl, Bruno is again still on top of the carriage trying to calm down the passengers.
Yep.
They come back, Ernst reads the letter for Mina, they find all this out, but the letter also says that they need to provide an affidavit. They need to provide proof that this man is Caster Liberum.
Right.
In order to receive the inheritance. And that it's, you know, Carl looks just like this guy, so they start to pitch this idea to Carl that, hey, maybe you should do this. Lucky then is looting bodies, and Lucky finds another piece of paper.
On the same guy. He finds it right before they run into another encounter, is what is having just re-listened to the episode. Just,
does he?
Yeah, it happens right before the next encounter, which I don't want to spoil. It is still in episode 4.
Okay.
Yeah. But yeah, Lucky finds it on the same guy, and which surprises me. That one person found one part of it and the other person found the other, which is
that
a great
might
mechanic.
Have been, that might have been either Dan did something wrong or I did something wrong in our campaigns.
Okay.
I believe, yeah, that was because I made it 2 separate pieces of paper specifically because of what happens in the party.
Yes.
At which point, some road wardens show up.
Yeah.
And they interview everybody. And... Bruno, Carl and Bruno, you know, they get interrogated and everything's fine with them.
Yep.
And Carl opens up to Bruno more about his dead brothers. I see, yeah, here in my notes, Carl has 3 brothers, 2 of whom have died.
Okay.
And so he was really worried that, yeah, this was his final brother who was dead. And Bruno kind of comforts him about it. And we see that Carl and Bruno have this very, very close relationship.
Yep.
And it keeps being reinforced throughout this entire show. We'll going to mention it many, many times, that these two characters are very, very close.
I would say that Carl is the reason why Bruno was still functioning. I think it's yes. their friendship and Carl's caretaker of
maybe
of
Carl,
Bruno.
You know what? Maybe Carl is the reason why Bruno has this job is because that, Bruno was his reference.
That could very well be.
That would not shock me in the least.
Yeah.
So everyone's kind of being interviewed. Mina is being interviewed by the road wardens and they go, okay, yeah, you know, you're doing everything fine. Lucky approaches the sergeant of the road wardens.
Yep.
And says that he needs to report a crime.
Yes. Yes.
Because Mina murdered his friend.
Yes. After she was specifically told that it was Lucky's friend and not to hurt him.
Yes.
Yeah.
The whole time Danny cannot look at Tim.
No.
She is so annoyed. And the road warden goes, okay, this is serious. And they go and they interview Mina. Mina explains the whole situation. This guy was a mutant and he was attacking us. This was not murder. The road warden then comes back and tells Lucky, killing a mutant is a service to the Empire. So, no, she didn't commit murder. You're being ridiculous.
Well, and Lucky doesn't like the answer, but, I mean, the road warden tells him, we're not doing anything about this.
He understands this is a person of authority.
Yeah.
It is at this point of they get escorted to an inn, and we actually jumped the gun a bit. I might have to go back and cut that. They're escorted through the road because it's starting to be nightfall at this point. They get to an inn. I believe the inn was the Seven Spokes.
The Seven Spokes, yes. Haveling Cook.
Yes, owned by a halfling.
Yep.
With seven sons and daughters.
Mm-hmm.
And it's totally not a reference to Seven Brides for Seven Brothers.
No, not at all.
It is at this point that Mina has the letter read by Ernst, talking about Caster Liberong and the inheritance and all those kinds of things. Lucky then goes to a physician who is treating Philippe.
Yes.
Does not get treatment himself.
Can't afford it.
He can't. That's true. But he does have her read the affidavit that he has found that confirms that the person bearing this affidavit is Caster Liberong.
Yep.
Now, very important here, Lucky finds this out while he is alone.
Yes, and no one overhears it.
No one overhears this. No one really explains to him what this is or why they need it. Lucky also does not know that the letter says they need an affidavit.
Nope. Not at this point. 100%.
So, Lucky then, as he's talking to the physician, he leaves the physician. And he goes to eavesdrop on the nobles. He fails this check.
Big surprise.
Yeah, not shocking at all. So then, and I love that this is the first time somebody does this, is for him to eavesdrop on women, totally not being a creep.
And the word leering comes out.
Yes. He beseeches the dark gods. This is a big mechanic in Wefurp.
Mm-hmm.
When you beseech the dark gods, you gain a corruption point. Once you match your willpower and toughness bonus in corruption points, you gain a mutation.
You roll for a mutation.
Yes, you're right. Yeah. You're right. I apologize.
It's okay.
You make an endurance check.
Yep.
If you fail it, you gain a mutation. Correct. And you roll to see what that is.
Yep, yep.
And then your corruption goes down by your willpower bonus.
Yes.
So, Lucky beseeches the dark gods to do this, and he gets all excited because he thinks he rolls a 5. He rolled a 50.
Oh.
Yeah. So he failed it. D100s are a hard for some people, especially if you're used to a D20 system, which I have to imagine Tim probably is. That's what most people are used to.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%.
And I believe that is where they kind of ended it for that night.
We do get the first reference here of the finger guns and moonwalking away.
Yes, we do.
Because some point in Lucky's discussion with the noble ladies, Jonna kind of favorably looks at him. And
yes.
And so he's like feeling all good about himself. He's like, I'm just going to moonwalk away, and he finger guns and it becomes a thing, which is pretty cool. It's one of those pieces of the banter that keeps coming back up, and I really enjoy it.
Yes, yes, I'm a big fan of that too.
Now, as I say, there was one other interaction, which was another occurrence of Ernst, where Lucky kept trying to get him to observe the physician working on Philippe, and Ernst doesn't want to have any part of this.
And
I realized Dan's just trying to play a difficult character interaction, but he's really just kind of a nudge. But Ernst shows that it's not just Mina he doesn't really care for. He doesn't really like anybody, is what it comes down to. So
he's not really a people person, and that's okay. So at that point, we then end episode 4 and we go to episode 5, which is A Lucky Day.
Yes.
We begin with Bruno has bought a pitcher of apple brandy from these halflings. And he drinks half of it by himself immediately and somehow does not get drunk or sick.
Yeah. He was passing rolls left, right, and center in that episode. Uh-huh.
Have you had brandy before, Dan?
Yeah, but you're supposed to sip it. You don't get it in a pitcher. Maybe a snifter. No.
I don't know the size of this pitcher, but I have to imagine that much brandy, there's no way it can't make someone sick. It's kind of crazy.
Yeah, I mean, I think a horse would have a hard time walking after.
But we have this happen. Lucky then, again, later in the night, after he's had some of this brandy, you know, I think maybe we attribute it to the liquid courage. He tries to seduce Jaina again by, quote, coming at her blind side. He just tries to appear. Hi!
Which I think fails.
It does.
Big surprise.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Philippe gets some more first aid. It's, like you said, at this point, Lucky tries to get Ernst to come over and, hey, you're learning to be a physician. This is a physician. Like, don't you want to learn this stuff? And Ernst's just like, no, I want to read my book. Please leave me alone. And then they go and, you know, they decide we're going to go to bed. So they, we have missed a very important thing here. Bruno.
Carl gets his mustache trimmed.
Carl gets his mustache trimmed. So now he looks like Castor Liberung. Or, quote, a dead version of himself in the woods.
So in the forest.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Great line.
I love it. It's just the amount of lines we get out of this show is amazing. But Bruno also got a significant amount of money. He got over 2 gold off of of these bodies. I believe it was the first one with the crossbow.
Yes.
And a necklace or something like that. Bruno had a bunch of money, and he takes some of this money, and he buys a private room for everybody.
Yes.
But Lucky specifically does not... Or no, that was another thing. I'll have to cut that out. So he buys a room for everybody. And Lucky then wants to make a bunk bed.
Yes, he does. The air is better up there.
Yes, he's able to breathe better.
It's warmer. Yeah. Yes, it's thinner air, which is, you know, he's... Yeah,
and he's colder even though somehow hot air rises. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah.
They try multiple times to make this bed. Eventually, Carl helps him, and they do. But they make a lot of noise. And the halfling owner comes up as like, hey, I gotta see what's going on in here. And we get the line from Mina of, just one moment, I am not the, how you say, the decent.
It's got vibes of mom coming upstairs where you're having a sleepover. Yes. If you kids don't quiet down.
It does. I will say, I think in this episode is when Danny finally starts to find the voice for Mina. In the episodes before this, I haven't really talked about it, but it's one of my favorite things in these, you know, first 5 episodes is the varying accents that Danny tries to throw on to Mina that just don't stick.
Yep. They're all spot on.
at one point, she does a Swedish one, and I almost pee myself laughing every time. It's so good. But she finally finds her voice for Mina, and it's great.
Yes.
They kind of agree, you know, yeah, they'll fix the bunk bed at the end. Like, the Halfling owner doesn't really care. It's just weird. And they get a good night's sleep, and Tim finally comes back up to full wounds. They come down for breakfast. It's a very good breakfast. They're in a Halfling-run inn, so the food's incredible. Bruno then buys a dozen Halfling pastries for himself.
Yeah. Yeah, he did. He also, just prior to that, manages to completely tick off the host by telling him that his food is terrible, and then somehow gets out of it by buying a bunch of pastries. Or maybe he did that the night before, and he's trying to make up for it in the morning. I can't remember.
I believe that was the night before, and Carl basically says, oh, I'm sorry, yes. He's okay. Drunk.
Yeah, gotcha.
Yeah. There's a lot of Carl apologizing.
Get used to it.
Yeah, it's going to be a theme, unfortunately. Bruno then forgets to try and collect payment again from the passengers, which, not such a huge deal considering they already paid for payment. Lucky then tries to scam the passengers out of payment.
Again.
As they're prepping the coach for the next day, yes. And it is at this point Lucky finds out a couple pieces of information. Philippe is staying here.
Yep.
Because he doesn't want to go to Altdorf. He says he's going to go down a different road or hop on a different coach or something.
Yep.
Going somewhere else. The noble woman is not going to be going with them. He finds out that the Jaina is the name of the maid.
Mm-hmm.
Do you recall what the name of the noble
Lady
woman
is? Azel?
Lady Azel. Or Azold. Azold. That's Azold, what it was. Yeah. Lady Azold.
Yeah.
So Lucky approaches the noble woman, and we find out that Lady Azold is the name of this noble woman. Her handmaid is Jaina. Of course, you know, we've been talking about her for a bit. And Lady Azold is really, really upset over how yesterday went. I don't think she's out of line for feeling that way.
I don't know that I'd want to get back at the coach.
But she also uses as a catalyst that she doesn't understand and doesn't like that they switched coachmen.
Sure.
In the middle of the trip.
Yeah.
Which, again, I don't think she's necessarily wrong about that. Is Mm-mm. she being a stuffy noble? A bit, yeah. Is she in the wrong? I don't think so.
No.
The only person that actually goes with them to Altdorf is Ernst. And we end the chapter with Ernst. You know, he tells Lucky, no, I already paid. Or chapter. We end the episode.
Yep.
With Ernst kind of telling Lucky, well, I paid for the whole journey at the beginning. I'm not going to give you more money. Okay, that's fine. Hop in. And they all head out to Altdorf.
Yep.
And that is where we end episode 5. And
which is a close to good wrapping point for us for this.
It is. I think, yeah, we're going to kind of end it here with them finally on the way to Altdorf properly. You know, they should be able to get there within a day. You know,
yep.
This is kind of their last stop before they get there. So the next couple episodes are going to be them getting to Altdorf and all the shenanigans there.
Yep.
And it's going to be interesting. You'll find out when you listen to the next one, everybody.
Yep. Our protagonists move the story along nicely. They've moved the story along to this point. The one thing that I wrote in my notes that I hadn't actually brought up, and this is going back to episode 3 real quick. This mm-hmm. is the first part where Danny's talking, and this, I guess, is in the pre-gaming part of the podcast, where she questions whether they're really heroes, having absconded with a coach, because
yes,
yeah, she's not sure as a player whether the characters can be considered heroes, and
yes.
And I think she's not far from wrong there. So
she's not, and we talked about this in episode 0 that this is one of my favorite mechanics of the system. I think you said it was yours as well. That characters in this game are not necessarily heroes. They're not adventurers. They're not necessarily going through life trying to be these great people. They are simply normal people that have been thrust into an extraordinary circumstance.
Yep.
And for me, that is one of the most enjoyable things about this game and about this party. is, you know, again, we have a witch, a lion in a wardrobe. No, we have a witch, we have a soldier, we have a stevedore, we have a coachman, and these dudes are already fighting mutants.
Yeah.
And there's a dead guy in the woods that looks exactly like a stevedore. Their life has clearly taken a hard left.
And which, to me, as a novice to the Warhammer world and the Warhammer realm and history and all of that, I was learning it when I listened to the first few episodes, and it was it just made it that much more fascinating. So
I guess the nature of the setting. That this is not Faerun Dungeons and Dragons, this big, you know, fantastical epic. It is grim. It is perilous. It is a podcast about an adventure.
It's gritty. Yeah, 100%.
Yeah. So, but yes, I think with that, we will we'll call it here.
And we'll thank you all for listening.
We do thank you all for listening. Join us again in a couple weeks for episode 2. With that,
goodbye and good night. We do.
Goodbye, everybody. We love you. Thank you for listening. You're beautiful, all of you. And have a lovely day.
And you know who you are, too.
You do. We're talking to you. Yes, you. You specifically, yeah. With the face.
Yeah, that face. Oh, I'll never forget it.
Neither will I. Your face almost kind of looks like a dead man in the woods.